So I just have one request, and that is that when we come in for this class, that you come in and sit zazen and not talk. It feels very strange to walk into the Zendo when everybody's talking and I'm bowing and offering and everybody's still talking. And so I think it would be good to prepare your mind and your body by just come in and sit down and do zazen until we start. That's my request. Okay. So today, last time, we just went through the Hokyo Zamai in order to refresh our memory, and so today we're going to start talking about the Tozan's five positions. A little louder. So we're going to start talking about Master Tozan's positions, five positions called five ranks. They're called various things, but we're used to calling them the five ranks. But ranks, I don't know what ranks means. it's a kind of ranking, a kind of way of ranking system. But as you will see, there are many ways of looking at these five ranks, five positions. I'm just going to read a little bit to orient us to the five positions. So in Hokyo Zamai, Jewel Mirror Samadhi, it goes like at midnight it is truly bright, at dawn it shows no trace. For beings it becomes a guide and functions to remove all suffering. Although not fabricated, it is not without speech. It is like facing a jewel mirror. Form and reflection behold each other. You are not it, but in truth it is you, like an ordinary infant, fully endowed with five characteristics. Okay, so these five characteristics. Not coming, not going, not arising, not abiding. Ba 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 ba. Speech without speaking. After all, nothing is grasped because the talk is not yet right. And then it says, in the double fire kunyi hexagram, this is a little different translation than we're used to. In the double fire kunyi hexagram, the phenomenal and the real interact. Piled up, they make three. The completed changes make five. Like the taste of the five-flavored zee grass, like the five-pronged vajra, wondrously embraced within the real, drumming and singing spring forth together. So drumming and singing are kind of like, you know, within this Hokyo Zamai, Master Tozan is continually bringing up ways of talking about the universal and the particular. So drumming and singing is like the universal and the particular in harmony. The stone woman gets up dancing, the wooden man sings. This is like the harmony between the relative and the absolute, between the universal and the particular. So these are all examples of the harmony of the universal and the particular. And it just goes on and on about this. So that's a one example of five ranks is about. So in the last, when we had our class, I handed out some material, and I hope that all of you who had the class brought that with you. If not, you have to leave. No, I'm kidding. So among the things I gave you was this. The diagrams and the circles. Which you didn't bring with you. Which you did bring with you. Diagram. Okay? Who doesn't have the diagram? Well, that's pretty good.
It's Alexandra David Curtis.
Oh, great. Thank you, Alexandra. That's very nice. Okay. So, if we look at the diagram, well, we went through this when we had our class. We went all through this. But I'm going to talk about it in a different way than I did when we had the class. So, if you look at this diagram, this page, this diagram is a picture of what I just read. It's a picture of what I just read. So I'll read it again. After all, nothing is grasped because the talk is not yet right. In the double fire hexagram, in the double fire clinging hexagram, that's the I Ching on the left. The phenomenal and real interact. Piled up, they make three, and the completed changes make five. Like the five-flavored Z grass, like the five-pronged Vajra. Wondrously embraced within the real, drumming and singing come forth together. Okay. Now, I'll go over this again. If we look at from the top, which transforms into five positions? They taste like the five-flavored herb and look like a thunderbolt. Okay. So at the top, we have five circles. You see the five circles in a vertical line? Okay. And then below, we have the diagram of the five circles in a different pattern. You see that? Okay. And then when it says the triple base underneath the vertical circles, the line number two, the little two there, says the triple basis is transformed into five positions. Mm-hmm. See that line? Is there anybody that doesn't see that line? You don't? Underneath the vertical, at the bottom of the vertical circle, there's a line that says the triple basis is a little line, a little type. Okay. The triple base is transformable into five positions. Okay. And it looks like the thunderbolt. Well, this may look to you like a thunderbolt, and it may not. It looks to me like a cow. But pretend it is a thunderbolt. You know, like a Vajra. I explained the Vajra before, and some people said they didn't know what that looked like. But it's like the Tibetan Vajra. You know, it has like a handle in the middle and five prongs on each end. So you have to stretch your imagination a little bit. Okay. Just see it as a mandala. Instead of a vertical succession, see it as a mandala. Okay, so if you look on the left of that mandala, there's in parentheses A, B, and C, right? A, B, and C. That's the triple, the triple base, and the triple base has the A has two circles, right? And then B is just one circle. and then C is two circles, right? So altogether, that's five. So he couches this in mysterious language, but really it simply means there are three, a basis of three, which contains five circles. To anybody that doesn't get that, don't be afraid to raise your hand. I don't want to go on with somebody not knowing what we're talking about. Yes?
I don't know what we're talking about.
Okay. See the A, B, and C?
Yep.
A is one section, B is one section, and C is one section.
Right.
Okay? And within A is two circles at the top.
Okay, so you're saying that both those circles
are part of A.
Okay, got it. Okay.
Okay.
B has two circles and C has two circles.
No, B only has one.
Okay, so B is a circle within itself, a circle?
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Whatever, you can call that one circle.
It's one circle, yeah, it's one circle.
Okay.
And the bottom is two circles.
Okay.
So the triple base is transformable into five positions. Tasting like the five flavored herb, you know, it's just an analogy to something. It's like, and the analogy is that the hyssop plant has five different flavors, and each of the flavors is related to the other four. And so that's the meaning here. Like, there are five different flavors here, and each flavor is related to the other four. You know, using the word flavor to mean circle. So it's really not talking about circles. It's just using the circles, you know, to talk about. It's like the phases of the moon, in a way, like the phases of the moon. So when Dogen says in the Gendo Koan, when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. Like when, and he's talking about this actually, when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. So you notice in the circles, there's a dark side and a light side. Each circle has a dark side and a light side, except one circle is totally dark and one circle is totally light. So we can use the moon as well to as an illustration. I like the idea of the moon actually as an illustration, because the moon is a symbol of enlightenment, and the phases of the moon are like the balance between the universal and the particular. The dark side is the universal, and the light side is the particular. This is always the case. In the Sandokai, Sekito talks about the light and the dark. Within the darkness there is light, and within light is there is darkness. So, and in the, this is called Go-i Koan, the five positions. Go-i is Japanese. Within these Go-i Koan, and it's a koan, each one of them is a kind of koan. Within these five positions, there's an aspect of light and an aspect of dark. So there's the universal and the particular in various phases of balance. When you sit Zazen, it's mostly dark. And when you turn out the light, it's dark, right? And everything becomes one. There's no differentiation until you start walking around bumping into things. But if you're just sitting there and you turn out the light, that's oneness. And when you turn the light on, that's differentiation. So the light side is differentiation, the dark side is the absolute or oneness before discrimination. So these are different phases. Excuse me. within enlightened understanding, or within enlightened practice. Because these, the right ranks are about practice and realization after, or practice after realization. So these are the five ranks. And the five ranks according to what I just explained. So if we look on the right hand side of the, of those, that vertical line of circles, it says the real containing the seeming. That's the first one from the top down. And then the seeming containing the real. So seeming and real, right? It uses those terms. You can use any terms you want. But seeming and real. Real means universal or absolute, dark. And seeming means things are not what they seem to be, but this... so it calls them seeming, right? Things seem to be real. And there is a certain reality to what things seem to be, but it's only a momentary reality. And then the seeming within the real. So this is the balance between the light and the dark. And the resurgence of the real, that's the middle one, and the seeming within the real, and the integration of the real and seeming. So those are the five ranks. But I don't want to talk about that now. I talked about it before, but I want to talk about something that I haven't talked about before. I'll get back to that, and we'll study that too. But and then if you look to the right of that, you find five terms. On the top is called shift. You see shift right next to the real and seeming. And then it says submission, below that. And then it says achievement, below that. And then it says collective achievement, below that. And then it says absolute achievement. So this is a different set of five ranks. So the one on the left, the one with the dark and the light we just talked about, these are our positions which reflect understanding, between understanding the absolute and the relative, and how they and the interaction of the absolute and the relative. The ones on the right, shift, submission, achievement, collective achievement, and absolute achievement, are kind of like a map of practice. That, so it, this is like I think it just occurred to me, like the circles, the circular forms are like Mahayana. The one on the right is kind of like Hinayana. It's like, you know, if you read the Hinayana sutras, they're not really Hinayana, but we just call them that. They're the Theravada sutra. They're more practical. You know, and the Mahayana sutras are more dealing with the dark and the light as emphasis. So there are two different aspects of how we view practice. So if we look at shift, shift means like how we hear about practice. We hear. Someone said to me one day, you know that there's a, this was back in the 50s, as a matter of fact it was Phil Wilson, who loves Suzuki Roshi. He said, you know, I go to the Zen temple, and there's a Zen master there. And I thought, is that right? That's interesting. And you should go for some time. But I never went. But I heard about it. So that was the first thing, I just heard about it. And then someone else took me there one day, a couple of years later. So that was my shift. Once I entered practice, once I experienced and entered into practice, then I decided that I would do that. So that's the shift from ordinary life to Dharma life. That's the first step. But it's also the first step from living by karma to living by vow. To living the step from ego centricity to Buddha centricity. So instead of from self-centeredness to Buddhist centricness. So that's the first step. That's what's called a shift. And then the second position is called submission. In other words, once you make the shift, then you submit to the practice. And that's so these are stages, like stages of practice. And then the third one is called achievement, which means that you actually have some realization, and that you have realization, and you don't. You're stuck. you're convinced that this is what you're actually doing. And then it's called collective achievement, which means that it's not just your achievement, but you are helping others too. Collective means that you're gathering others and helping others to practice. So your achievement is not just your achievement, but it belongs to everybody. So this is really opening up your universal mind. And then absolute achievement is like where the first four are kind of like steps. But the fifth one, which is absolute achievement, is like there's no longer any question about absolute and relative. Or subject and object, or duality, or oneness. That's all resolved. That's just perfectly resolved. So that's like the end of practice, which has no end. And Dogen uses this in his Genjo Koan. How many of you have not read Dogen's Genjo Koan? Someday you can read Genjo Koan. But in Genjo Koan, Dogen has this famous verse, which Alexandra handed out to you. And you all know this is the heart of Dogen Shobo Genzo, the heart of Dogen's Genjo Koan. Genjo Koan is the first fascicle of his famous 100 fascicle work. And it's the touchstone for all the others. And this is the heart of Genjo Koan. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self, oneself, is to be enlightened by the 10,000 dharmas. To be enlightened by the 10,000 dharmas is to be freed from one's body and mind and those of others. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this traceless enlightenment continues forever. So each one of these lines, of course, is a koan in itself. But if you think about it, you can see that the shift in Tozan's first rank is like to study the Buddha way is to study the self. Right? That's the shift. What does that mean to study the self? And then submission is to study oneself is to forget oneself. So forgetting oneself is letting go of body and mind, dropping body and mind, and that's like submission to reality or to the Dharma. And then to forget oneself is to be enlightened by the 10,000 Dharmas. So that's achievement, which means that you and all the 10,000 Dharmas are not different. And you realize the 10,000 Dharmas as yourself. And that to be enlightened by the 10,000 Dharmas is to be freed from one's body and mind and those of others, which is collective achievement. That's the fourth one. And then the fifth one, absolute achievement, which, as Dogen says, no trace of enlightenment remains. In other words, there's no difference between delusion and enlightenment for this person. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this traceless enlightenment is continued forever. So that's the culmination of practice, which is never culminated. So I talked to my Vimi Roshi about this before he died, unfortunately. And I asked him if it seemed to me that Dogen's this part of Dogen's Genjo Koan seemed to me similar to the five ranks. And Dogen used, he said, he was pretty sure that it is. And Dogen didn't condone studying the five ranks. He didn't like that. Because he felt that it became too much of an intellectual game or exercise. And if you have this book, I don't know how many people bought the book. Well, you'll find that when you read the book, it'll boggle your mind because you see so many different commentaries and the way people, monks and scholars, have thought about it. There's no one way to think about it. And I'll talk about that. But after talking to him, after talking to my Zen Roshi, he came out with this explanation about equating Dogen's statement with the five ranks. But his statement was with the five ranks of the second five ranks of practice rather than the five ranks of circles. So I'll read it and comment on it. he says, after reading this, I've just read to you that, to study the Buddha way and so forth, and then he says, I see this particular passage being almost exactly parallel to Master Tozan's five ranks. So Tozan, when you read Dogen's works, you can see the five ranks as being hidden or embedded in a lot of the pretty much stuff that he's talking about. So, you know, for a long time, the five ranks was part of the transmission ceremony, and for monks, for priests, and then they stopped using it because of this problem. But actually, Dogen used it, and he used it in the transmission documents, but it's in a way that he used it in his own way. Dogen did this with so much of Buddhism, you know. He's presenting Buddhism, but he's presenting it in his own understanding, and it's often just disguised. Unless you really understand that you see these things cropping up, but if you don't know that, you don't see it.
So you said somebody stopped using it because of this problem?
Well, yeah, they stopped using it as part of the transmission ceremony.
Because of what problem?
Because of the intellectual entanglements.
Okay.
Yeah. Dogen like more straightforward entanglements. Anyways, so this is by Vizumi. He says, as I have often mentioned, we can appreciate Dogen Zenji's writings in many different ways. And Dogen Zenji himself said that you shouldn't study the five ranks. Forget about it. And yet, in saying so, he himself used it in a way that shows that he really digested the idea of the five ranks as expounded by Master Tozan, and actually presented it in his own way. In other words, he absorbed the Chinese Zen heritage into his own understanding and expressed it in a very different way, and yet, basically, it's exactly the same. And I always say, if you give a talk on Zen, it's good to give a talk on what you have absorbed. If you simply give a talk about an idea, then it won't carry for people. So we study, but then we digest it, and it becomes our own. And when it becomes our own, then we can give a talk in our own way, and it's the same thing. So what I see is that Dogen Zenji tried to avoid an intellectual, conceptualized understanding of the five ranks. It's easy to be intellectual, especially with well-structured koans like this, in which there are five stages to develop. So today I want to briefly mention how Dogen Zenji interprets and expresses these five ranks, rather than how Master Tozan does it. It's fascinating, the two are almost exactly parallel. So what are the five stages and how do you make the ranks as a major brief guide for your practice? So, so the heading here is, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. So this is Dogen's first line, right? And he says there are different kinds of five ranks. The particular one I'm going to talk about is called Kokun. The five ranks is a kind of progress of achievement. Right. The first stage is called Koi, or shift, the position of shifting, which I talked about. Shifting from what to what? Shifting from the ordinary way that we think to the way of the so-called Zen tradition or Buddha Dharma. Shift our attention from, I don't know if secular is the right word, but I don't think it is, our actual discursive or self-centered way of thinking. Self-centered doesn't necessarily mean something derogatory, I like that line, but rather based on one's own ideas for evaluating everything. That's what everybody does. So shift from that way to live to the so-called Buddha way. That's the shift. That shift is to study the Buddha way is to study oneself. Interestingly, he says, self-centered doesn't necessarily mean something derogatory. It simply means centered on the self, which everybody is. And so, we, in Buddhism, we get into a kind of critical mode. When you read the sutras sometimes, or commentaries, they seem to get into a kind of critical mode, especially among when we're talking about right and wrong, good and bad, and so forth, into a kind of dualistic way of moralizing. Human beings tend to be self-centered, which is quite natural, because of our discriminatory way of thinking. And so to go to the next stage of practicing the Dharma in order to help us find our way out of being self-centered is just a stage in our life. It's not like by being self-centered all our life that we're bad. It's simply it's the cause of our suffering. So we can't be blamed for the cause of our suffering as being bad. That's just the way we are. And so when we discover the Dharma, we have a way out of that. It's time to take a break, right? 5 minutes to stand up with no talking, please.
Would you like a bell with me?
I beg your pardon?
Would you like a bell with me in 5 minutes?
Yeah. That's it. then he says, you know, he of course translated Mazumi, Dogen Tsenjo Koan, and he said in his translation to study the self and to forget the self. But actually, he says, study is really not the right word. It's almost like we're doing the opposite thing. Instead of forgetting the self, we are reinforcing the self. So how do we forget this? I'm bringing the wrong place. There's some problem with the translation. I translated na'aru as study. The word na'aru means to learn. Not to study in the same way that we study a text or study a book or something, but to study the self, to learn this, to learn the Buddha way is to practice the self, or even just practice. To practice the Buddha way is to practice the self. To study is to study. To learn is to learn. So study is a little different. And he says it's like doing something over and over again. Like if you, we used to think practicing the piano is not like zazen, but actually it is. It's that you do something over and over and over until it becomes part of you. We always say that we learn through our pores. We learn the Dharma through our pores, not so much through our head. And through our bones, and it's through the ache in our bones. We learn the Dharma through our aching joints. So there's some problem with the translation. I translated Narao study. The word Narao means to learn, but to learn in a very repetitious way. Just doing it over and over and over. Just like how kids learn something from their parents or from school in the Japanese style. Day after day, the pattern of life is the same. That's what we are doing in a way in Zazen. So we do Zazen over and over and over. So to learn the Buddha way is to learn the way. In other words, what we are repeatedly doing every day is learning the way as well as learning the Buddha way. Then we focus that upon so-called Zazen, whatever Zazen is. Of course, there are different ways to interpret what Zazen is, but anyway, we can generally understand what Zazen is, and that's good enough. Here. So then, the second line is to study the self, is to forget the self. That's called, well, I call the first one, to study the Buddha. It just occurred to me, you know, in the 50s, we used to say, turn on, tune in, drop out, far out.
Yeah,
the 60s. The 60s, yeah. So, kind of like that. So the first one is tune in, right? No, turn on. Yeah. First, turn on. And then tune in, right? So to study oneself is to forget oneself. And that's called, the second stage is bu'i, or submission. Dogen Zenji says, to study the self is to forget the self. How do we do that? It's almost like we are doing the opposite thing. Instead of forgetting the self, we are reinforcing the self. So that's what we're doing all the time, is reinforcing the self. So how do we forget the self? What is the self to begin with anyway? So that's what we study. What is the self? And this is what we spent our last 2 days, 2 days of Sheen studying, what is the self? Little girls are made of sugar and spice and everything nice, and boys are made of puppy dog tails. So, are we reflecting upon our practice in that way, in such a way? That's what we should be doing. This submission, give up something that we usually cling to, and study oneself. Practice the Buddha way is to forget oneself. So, I think to forget oneself is called renunciation. That's what we mean by renunciation. There are many ways, many things that we call renunciation, like taking all your belongings and throwing them in the ocean or something, but actually it means to let go of self-centeredness. And, you know, when the young monks go to Ahaji or Sojiji, well, to Ahaji anyway, as a young monastery in Japan, they are nobody. They just are nobody. And they just submit themselves to the practice. And they're brainwashed. And they come out all nice and clean. But no, I mean, you know, that they've learned how to, they've been through the experience of no self by the time they're leaving. So that's called a submission, which is the third of these acts. And then the fourth one, drop out. The third stage is ko'i. The pronunciation is the same as the first stage. But this ko'i means succession or achievement. When you really do that, in Dogen Zenji's words, to forget the self is to be confirmed by or to be enlightened by the 10,000 dharmas. To be verified, to be confirmed, to be enlightened by the 10,000 dharmas. In other words, there's no difference between you and the when you have realization, and there's no difference. Although the 10,000 dharmas are all different, they're also all the same. This was when I talked about when in our Dharma, talking about Dharma in our two-day study, when the eight consciousnesses are revolved or turned around, transformed, they become transformed into enlightenment. Or wisdom. And the ego, self-centeredness, becomes the wisdom of equality, and mano-vijnana, which is the consciousness which distinguishes between the various sense input, becomes the vertical. The wisdom which sees into the true nature of all objects, of all phenomena. So one is the horizontal, the other is the vertical, the hierarchical. So this is how we understand all dharmas as a reflection of ourself. Or as, since there's no more self, we no longer view this person as a self, basically. There's only dharmas. There's only the whole universe is the true self, becomes your true self, which it already is, of course, but we block it out. So, and this is also the fifth circle, which is dark. Fifth circle, which is dark, is the four wisdoms become, the eight levels of consciousness become the four wisdoms. And so there's no more discrimination on the basis of self, on the basis of a view of self. You have to remember, when we say no self, it means no view of a self. You don't see yourself as a self, which is only a separate self. Because the center is no longer the false center. The center is the Buddha center. You are centered on Buddha instead of centered on self. So all of our activity becomes the Buddha's activity. You have to change your seat. Sit in the Buddha's seat. And that's what you do actually when you sit zazen. Zazen is getting off your self-centered seat and sitting on your Buddha seat. That's why we got out of the cushion, because that's the Buddha seat. And you no longer think of yourself as self, as myself. You don't refer to yourself as myself. When you're sitting zazen, it's just zazen is sitting zazen. Hearing is sitting zazen, seeing is sitting zazen, feeling is sitting zazen, and so forth. But there's no I sitting zazen. So there's no self-centeredness. It's Buddha-centered. So you take the Buddha seat. And so how do you stay in the Buddha seat all the time? So that's why he says, whatever zazen is, we can look at zazen in various ways, right? There's more than one way to look at what zazen is. So, in other words, so then the fourth stage, gokui, or collective achievement, not just yourself, oneself. Dogen Zenzi says, to be confirmed by the 10,000 dharmas means to free one's body and mind. Or he uses the words drop out, but actually he means drop off. Drop off one's own body and mind as well as those of others. In other words, a bodhi in others' body and mind. That's a funny sentence. Drop them off, he says out. Someone was just asking me this morning about the vows, save all sentient beings. What does that mean? Well, how can we save all beings? Sentient being means save yourself. Dogen Zenji is talking about the same thing here. When we really save ourselves, when you really liberate yourself, that's the moment that you will see what it what is really meant by all beings are liberated. So Shakyamuni Buddha says the same thing. All beings have the Buddha nature and virtues. That's what the Buddha said when he attained realization, and that's the fourth stage of gokui, or do your thing, and drop off. And so, being confirmed by the 10,000 dharmas, in other words, everything comes to you and it's not alien. You are the 10,000 dharmas. Free the body and mind of others. You know, we have Jijuyu Zamai, the samadhi of the self, the samadhi of self enjoyment. Of course, who is it that enjoys? That's another question. Self-enjoyment samadhi, or self-fulfilling samadhi. And tajuyu is samadhi, other fulfillment, other fulfillment for others. So when we have our own realization, then we can, it's contagious, and we can affect other people with it. So we kind of help people to, it's not kind of like a pinball machine. You know, the ball, and the ball goes out and it hits these little, each one of them lights up. Each one of the stops lights up. My mind works in strange ways. So then the fifth one, is called absolute achievement, right? And for Dogen, it's no trace of enlightenment remains. And this traceless enlightenment is carried, is continued forever. I really like that sentence a lot. No trace of enlightenment remains, and this traceless enlightenment is continued forever. So it's like unselfconscious. This is like the state of being totally unselfconscious. It's called far out. So he says, then the last one, the fifth stage of koko-i, integration of that achievement, you don't forget about that so-called trace of satori, or enlightenment. In Dogen Zenji's world, he said, there are the traceless enlightenment. Allow that traceless enlightenment to continue forever. So this is called, Tozan called it the bird's path. The bird's path is like, you know, you fly away, but you can't trace that line where the bird flies, or you can't trace the line where the fish swims. And allow the traceless enlightenment to continue forever. When it continues forever, time is being expressed, and in space, let it manifest moment after moment as our life. That's the fifth stage. Integration and succession. We are not just casually sitting here. We are not just sitting here to practice shikantaza or zazen or whatever. So this is beyond all that. It's not just to nourish further our ego or one's own ideas of such, or daydreaming of some sort of how can we proceed to practice in such a way. I want you to think about yourself. Why you are sitting here. Why are you sitting here? It will kind of give you a certain direction and how we can do it and how much we... That sounds like my Zen Roshi talking. It's never been edited. And how we can do it and how much we can do. That's our practice. So the fortunate part is that we can appreciate our practice from intrinsic aspects and experiential aspects. So this is important. Intrinsic and experiential. So the intrinsic is like the dark side, and experiential is like the light side. When you look at this, these circles, there's a light side and a dark side. The dark side is intrinsic. In other words, we have this nature. You know, everyone has Buddha nature, and it's intrinsic. What is experiential is the light side. So the light side is like form. The experiential is like form, you know. And intrinsic is like emptiness. So in the Heart Sutra, you say form is emptiness, emptiness is form. Form is form, emptiness is emptiness. So this is the essential and the experiential. The intrinsic expresses itself as the experiential. So all of our experience is based on what is intrinsic. So as Suzuki Roshi used to say, you know, don't worry about where you're headed or what happens when you die or whatever like that. So you will always find your place in the universe. Wherever you are, you will always find your place in the universe. That's kind of like what practice is. Wherever you are, you will find your place wherever you are in the universe. Because the universe is yourself. Even though sometimes it doesn't seem like it. Most of the time, maybe. said the fortunate part is that we can appreciate our practice from intrinsic aspects and experiential aspects. So even though experientially, whatever we, wherever we stand, we shouldn't forget that intrinsically our life is no other than the Buddha Dharma, ourselves or itself. And always there, intrinsically, the liberation. Then how to really go with it, and yet, month after month, day after day, moment after moment, to refresh that, to appreciate, to live our way, our life in this way. So he says, I hope I made my point clear. So please refresh yourself and refresh your devotion and determination, so-called Bodhi mind, which seeks for Bodhi enlightenment, or wisdom, or realization, or the way. However, how we give that implication for Bodhi, when we seek for it, and as well as to have the understanding of our life itself is no other than Bodhi, enlightenment, then each moment you have contentment, and at the same time each moment is to be the moment in which you seek further advancement. So, in other words, right here is where we settle, and yet we keep going. So, 35. What time are we supposed to end?
8:45.
8:45? Okay. So, I didn't mean to talk all the time, but I did. And then I didn't mean to talk all the time. do you have any questions? Is that fairly clear? Or not clear?
I have an experiential question.
Okay.
I caught a thief last weekend.
Had a what?
I caught a thief last weekend.
She caught a thief.
A thief.
Yeah.
Okay.
He stole something. He took something from my bag at Kids Coffee in North Berkeley.
Wow.
So I caught him. I caught his. He was in his car, and I asked him for my thing back. I pretty much hollered. But I have a quandary because the police had me ID him, and I have such a not great feeling about sending him to any possible punishment because I just don't feel very positive about the penal system that we have. And so they want me to sign a paper after IDing him, and that could mean that something could happen to him. And on the other hand, of course, he did take something from me, even though he did give it back. So this brings me sort of a great, some amount of trouble in my mind because I don't feel resolved what's the right thing to do. So I thought I would ask this community what they think.
Well, I'll give you a story from Dogen. Mm-hmm. It talks about he was a famous warrior prince in Japan.
Dogen
told a story about a prince. There was a warrior prince. And someone took his sword. And stole his sword, which was a very, you know, unique kind of instrument. And very valuable thing. And so they caught this thief, right? And they brought the thief to the prince. And, you know, and then here's the sword. And the prince said, "That's not my sword. I don't know whose sword that is. It's not mine." That's one way of dealing with that kind of situation. Nobody can tell you what to do. People can make suggestions, but you have to make the decision.
The economy is so bad, I can't
feel. Well, I don't know if it has to do with the economy. We understand why people steal for various reasons.
Because they don't have money?
That's one reason. But he gave you back whatever it was. So
I don't know if I lost some $20. I don't really care.
But anyway,
I just got my tickets back for Ellsberg. Right.
So you have some compassion for him, and you don't want to. In other words, it's over for you. Is it over for you?
Well, I have to. The police want me to sign something.
But you don't want to punish him.
I know.
Don't sign it. But if you don't want to punish him, don't sign it.
But some people say to me, oh, but he did steal something. You've got to teach, you know. And also you have to ask yourself sometimes if you don't teach somebody something.
It depends on what you want to teach him.
Tell the coin.
People going to jail don't usually learn much.
That's right.
But if you show him compassion, that's something he might be able to learn. That there's another aspect. But he may just think that you don't want to do that because you think he'll come and get you. But if you don't think that, you just say, I want to sign it. I don't want to punish him. He gave me back my whatever he took, and I'm not interested in punishing him. I think if I was in your boots, and I was you, which I'm not, but I am,
I'm going to change your wardrobe.
I might do that.
Go ahead. If you were my boot, my spot, my
I might do that. I might do that.
Yeah.
But I can't tell you what I would, what you should do. Where's the way in the back?
Well, on the trigrams, though, I understand that the top trigram and the second trigram. And I understand how they can be combined to make the fourth and fifth trigram, the third and the fourth trigram. Where's the fifth trigram from? Where does the fifth hexagram come from?
Okay, well, I just want to say this.
Yes.
I haven't studied the I Ching. So okay. That's something I'm not so concerned about.
Okay.
So I can't answer your question. Ed?
Yeah, just a quick question. This talks about advancement and achievement.
Right.
And yet our tradition, it seems like since I've been here, we've talked about not having a gaining idea in our practice. And so I'm just wondering how to work with this.
Well, that's right. So it's a natural progression. It's not like you're trying to achieve something.
So this is a volition.
It's not like, oh, I'm going to get to that stage. Although, aspiration is different, has a different quality than gaining. Because you're not trying to get something up from outside. What you're doing is bringing something from inside. So to stimulate or to coax the Dharma from inside, that's what the stages are. They're not trying to achieve some stage. The stages come about through repetition. Just thinking about it over and over again, it's like, this is the old saying, when you walk in the fog, your clothes get wet unawares. So, practice is called walking in the fog. But then at some point, oh yeah, I'm wet. And there's somebody next to you, Ed. Yeah.
We say myself, yourself, and about self. There's one self, and there's myself and yourself. And I remember in Japan when I was there, the Japanese people that were talking would say myself and yourself. There was a kind of awareness of this being part of the same self.
Well, Dogen uses the term myself, yourself as one term, kind of like with a slash, myself, yourself. Yeah, we are inseparable, and at the same time, we're separate.
And would the big self that we are all part of, would that be the Buddha self?
Yes, but all the parts are also the Buddha self. I can't remember everybody's name.
Mike?
No. The lady with the blonde hair.
I just wonder, you know, I got this book and we have these other things, but I kind of like, you know, from one class to another, I don't really think about this very much.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just wondering, is there anything in particular that you would suggest that we read or in between or just not?
Well, yes, there are things you can read. I didn't make a bibliography. I could do that, actually. But the one book that I suggested was this one called The Infinite Mirror, which is Master Sheng Yin's commentary. So I would suggest that. I don't agree with everything he said, but the other part of that is that we don't have to agree. You know, everybody has slight variations on the meaning. So, different ways, and sometimes the, I meant to say this, I don't have time tonight, but sometimes, you know, if you look at the five positions, you know, like the first two positions are like form is emptiness and emptiness is form. It's the basis. And then coming from within the real, and then the emergence of the real, and then the other two. And so sometimes they're affixed in a different way, arranged in a different way. Right? So when I looked at Sheng Yin's arrangement, it didn't accord with what I was used to, but that's just his arrangement. You know, we can arrange them any way we want. We can arrange the circles any way you want to satisfy your understanding of the Dharma. So we'll talk about that next time more. It's okay.
Maybe this is just because I haven't studied the Genjo Koan.
Yes.
But thinking about his translation, his note on translation of study, so the second line is to study oneself is to forget oneself, or to practice the self is to forget the self, and
Well, you know, to be one with the self is to forget the self. You know, to drop body and mind. Well, where are you going to drop it, and what is it you're going to drop? but to forget the self means to be totally one without an opposite. That's to forget the self, because the self arises with discrimination. That's exactly what makes the self arise, is discrimination. So when this discrimination is not, when you cut the cat into one, then there's no opposite. That's the self drop. It's time, huh?